We had a lively interest in whatever the administration was doing with respect to church and state.
This is something that we fought hard for.
Religious liberty is one of the hallmarks and part of the bedrock of American democracy.
We at the BJC like to say when anyone's religious liberty is threatened, everyone's religious liberty is at risk.
Welcome to the BJC Podcast. I'm Christine Browder, the Associate Director of Mobilization, and today we're bringing you a special podcast from one of our partners in Missouri. In just a moment, you'll hear an interview between BJC Executive Director Amanda Tyler and Brian Kaler, the host of the podcast called Baptist Without an Adjective. But before we get to that, Brian is here with us today. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
So, Brian, you wear a lot of hats in Baptist life. Not only do you host that podcast, you also serve as editor of Word and Way, which is a Baptist magazine in the Midwest. Plus, you're the associate director of ChurchNet, which happens to be one of the supporting bodies of the Baptist Joint Committee. Tell us a little bit about ChurchNet.
Sure. ChurchNet was started back in 2002, originally as the Baptist General Convention of Missouri, and I started on staff about a year later. Served in a number of roles and am now associate director for the last 2 years. And we're a group of Baptists that were looking to kind of change the way Baptists in Missouri were getting away from some of the conflicts in Southern Baptist life and re-engaging with the broader Baptist family. So among the first couple things we did was join the Baptist Joint Committee and the Baptist World Alliance so that we could partner with other Baptists, like-minded Baptists, and we're excited to be a member body of the BJC.
Well, great. We're so grateful for the support that you guys have been with us over the years. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? What made you start Baptist Without an Adjective?
Yeah, so almost 2 years ago, I became editor of Word and Way, which is a Baptist publication in the Midwest. It goes back to 1896, and we've seen different forms throughout our history. But we're a publication that's unique, I think, in Baptist life among publications in that we are a pan-Baptist publication. We cover all types of Baptists. We're an independent press. We're not attached to any denominational body. And so we cover any type of Baptist that happens to exist in the Midwest region. Particularly, we do a lot of American Baptists and Cooperative Baptists, Southern Baptists, National Baptists USA, National Baptists America. So several of the groups that we're representing and serving are also part of the BJC. So we started our podcast back in March, and the name of the podcast was to kind of fit with what we do at Word and Way, that we cover all types of Baptists regardless of the adjective. So we are Baptists without an adjective, and the show features various voices from those different types of Baptist denominational bodies, as well as some global Baptist leaders. And so we've had about 36 episodes so far on the program. We're a weekly interview format. And we've had a wide variety of Baptist leaders from the region, the nation, and around the world.
We're excited that you got to have a chance to visit with Amanda. In this conversation that we're going to hear in just a few minutes, you talk about the Johnson Amendment, which is the provision in the tax law that separates partisan campaigning from 501c3 organizations. You've been a big advocate for keeping the law, along with thousands of other faith leaders and nonprofits. And I'd love to hear more about why this issue is so important to you.
Yeah, well, it was great to have Amanda in Missouri earlier in October at a ChurchNet event and then sit down and interview her for the podcast. And the Johnson Amendment has been big in Missouri over the last couple of months, probably more involved in our Senate campaign than any other election across the country. So it's been good to have the BJC resources to help spread in the debate and the discussion that we've had here in Missouri on the issue. I probably came to think about this issue probably close to a decade ago when there was a really deliberate attempt to try to overturn the political campaign activity ban, or more commonly known as the Johnson Amendment. I just finished my PhD in political communication, and so this is right there up my alley of dealing with politics and rhetoric, and particularly my research at the doctoral level and afterwards has been focused on the intersection of religion and politics. And so I've been particularly concerned about this idea of thinking about the inherent political implications of our faith. But the problem there is that when we take that political message, it's not partisan, but that political message of the teachings of Jesus and the prophets, and we start to mix it with another political message and another political agenda, we transform it into something different. And I believe that we pervert it, we corrupt our houses of worship when we take away what we're supposed to be focusing on and that political message, and then we start mixing it with another message, be that Republican or Democratic or Green or Libertarian or whatever that other message and agenda may be. And I think that more than ever, we really need that prophetic voice from our churches that's not just partisan hacks and part of the system. And so I think it's important that we keep that integrity and that independence. And the political campaign activity ban helps that. It helps protect pastors. It helps protect houses of worship from the pressures and the divisiveness of our partisan politics that we have today.
Well, Brian, we're certainly grateful for your voice and advocacy on that issue. We're about to hear the interview that you did with Amanda when she was in Missouri in October of 2018. We've edited it a little bit for time, but the entire interview is available on Baptist Without an Adjective feed. Brian, how can they hear the podcast?
Well, sure. So people can find the program in iTunes or the other podcast platform by searching for Baptist Without an Adjective, or you can head over to our website, wordandway.org, and we have the icon there. Or also you can go to tinyurl.com/BWAApodcast and find the feed there.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that information, Brian. Want to encourage you guys to check it out. Brian, thanks for joining us today. And now here's the interview with Brian Kaler and Amanda Tyler from October of 2018.
Well, thank you, Amanda, for joining us here on the program.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So earlier this month, in October, you testified before a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on threats to religious liberty. What was that experience of testifying like?
Well, it was first a real honor. I'd never testified before a congressional committee before. I spent 8 years working for a member of Congress, so I had spent plenty of time behind the dais prepping my member and getting ready and hearing testimony. But it really was a thrill to be on the other side and to be in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room. It was a sparsely attended hearing, I will say, and I think that had a lot to do with the timing of it. It was right in the middle of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. And so I was frankly surprised they went forward with the hearing with so much else going on in their committee. So for that reason, and this isn't terribly unusual, but with the subcommittee's meeting, the chairman, Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, was there, as was the ranking member, the highest ranking Democrat on the committee, who is Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii. So they were there with their staffs the whole time, but otherwise it was not a well-attended hearing from the senators. I think it was a great opportunity to focus on religious liberty and the BJC's approach to those questions, and to highlight our positions, to have our supporters and other friends see us in that venue. I found it's not the most satisfying way to have a really in-depth conversation, right? Because you speak, and then the senators speak, and they choose who to ask questions to. But great experience, and I'm glad I got to have the opportunity to do that.
But you noted a couple things. For instance, you talked about the fact that if the U.S. doesn't properly protect religious liberty for all, then that undermines our ability to advocate for that right globally. That was a really foundational aspect of your testimony, and I think that was important to kind of flesh out. Why is it important for the United States to lead the way in protecting religious liberty for all?
Yeah, I think since our founding, our country has been a world leader in protecting religious liberty, and it comes from the unique way that our Constitution protects religious freedom. It has allowed the United States to largely avoid conflict, and certainly violent conflict, in our country over religious difference. And that is truly remarkable when you consider both how diverse and pluralistic our society is, and also how much conflict there is around the world still around religious liberty. The Pew Forum has put out some statistics that 3/4 of the world's population live in a state of high or very high restrictions on religious liberty, and we're fortunate that we don't. But to remain a world leader, to be able to lead by example, requires that we attend to threats to religious liberty here in the United States. I don't think that they are on the same scale as some of the threats that we're seeing around the world, but we do need to attend to things domestically so that we can lead around the world, too.
You also talked about the importance of recognizing the two clauses that protect religious freedom in the First Amendment. And I wonder if you could talk about that balance of those and the two different clauses and how they work together.
Yeah. So religious freedom is protected in the United States principally by the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And I don't think I can say those 16 words too much, particularly now, because, you know, in that hearing, one of the other witnesses, in his submitted testimony, he kept talking about the First Amendment's guarantee of the free exercise of religion. Mm-hmm. Really, the First Amendment protects religion. And the way it does that is in two ways. Yes, it protects free exercise rights, but it also protects against the government establishing religion. And at the BJC, we talk about that really means that the government remains neutral in matters of religion. It doesn't pick sides. It doesn't pick one religion over another. It also doesn't pick religion over irreligion. And that government neutrality is crucial to protecting religious freedom, particularly in a country like ours that has so many different religious faiths and so many people who right now don't claim any religious faith at all. So we really have to have a government that remains neutral in matters of religion in order to have robust religious freedom.
Yeah, and I like the way you talked about that. Both of these clauses are protect religion. You know,
that's right.
And it's not just the free exercise, but that establishment, which is part of our Baptist heritage, this the metaphor of the wall or this hedge of separation. With Roger Williams was a concern for the church, primarily, was his area that he was concerned about. I mean, also, Jefferson and Madison see it as being good for government as well.
Right.
But I think that's an important aspect.
That government and religion have distinct responsibilities, distinct roles, and that neither should try to do the job of the other. And I think that is the foundation of separation of church and state, which, of course, is the separation of the institutions of church and state, and that promotes religious freedom. I think that point is being lost right now in a lot of conversations that we hear about religious liberty.
So you mentioned that this was your first time you testified, and you've been on the job almost 2 years, not quite. And so clearly you're doing something else. So what else besides testifying before Congress does the BJC do?
Yeah, well, there are other things other than testify that we do even in relation to Congress. So we, you know, visit members' offices and advocate on a number of different issues over the last year and a half, mostly about protecting the Johnson Amendment, because that's been the livest issue on the Hill. But there have been other bills and proposals through the years that the Baptist Joint Committee has provided education and advocacy around. We will speak on panels to members of Congress. My colleague this month is speaking to a panel in Congress about blasphemy laws. So there are lots of different issues that come up that we'll provide some education on. We also file friend of the court briefs in courts around the country, principally the U.S. Supreme Court, but other lower courts as well, and we engage in other kinds of education for churches, schools and seminaries, other individuals who might visit with groups to the Baptist Joint Committee's offices on the Hill. And we, our kind of latest area of work is mobilization, where we are equipping our supporters to be advocates for religious freedom in their own communities.
And it helps, you know, having Baptists all over the country. So you're primarily in D.C., but then by helping to mobilize and to equip Baptists in their various state capitals or on local communities can help spread that work in a lot of different ways.
That's right, because we're seeing increasingly religious liberty threats arising on the local and state level. There are certain things that happen in Congress. There are very few number of cases that come to the U.S. Supreme Court. The vast majority of work really is on the local level.
Well, you mentioned the Johnson Amendment, or also the IRS calls it the political campaign activity ban, but it is more commonly referred to as the Johnson Amendment. So, and this really probably, you've probably dealt with that more in the last 2 years than the rest of your life combined, I'm sure.
We won't age you. No doubt.
So why is that issue so important?
Well, I think the reason I've been dealing with it so much over the last 2 years, 18 months, is because it has become targeted by the current administration for elimination.
Right. This wasn't your idea to bring up the topic.
Right, exactly. Now, the BJC had in the past supported this partisan campaign ban for 501c3 nonprofits because we saw that it was important to have an independence and nonpartisan character
for not just our churches, but the entire nonprofit sector. And so when smaller threats had come up in the past, the BJC was there to help educate about what the law actually said, to explain that the law itself really was not a concern from a religious liberty perspective, and our concerns about implications for religious liberty were it to be removed. And so we were kind of poised and ready to take action, but we've seen a lot of activity here because President Trump has said he wants to totally destroy the Johnson Amendment. Vice President Pence has made similar statements, and there have been legislative proposals in Congress to try to eliminate the language or change it in such a way that would have the effect of eliminating it, that were trying to put into the tax bill and continue to be put into spending bills or concerns that they might be.
We covered this recently in episode 32, and had a little bit of a segment from you from the last time that you and I talked in an interview. But also I noted in there that the BJC really led the effort last year of bringing together over 100 faith groups to advocate with Congress and say, we don't want this to be changed. And so I think that that's been a significant aspect that we've seen the work of the BJC really making a difference and mobilizing a large community. Many of our readers and listeners have gone to faith-voices.org to sign their number. I guess the last I saw was, 4,500 people, all 50 states.
That's right. And more than 100 here in Missouri. I can't remember the exact number, but we hope that that continues to grow. And I think the reason that we've seen such a popular outcry in response to our ask for people to engage on this issue, the number one reason I hear is just the impact that repealing the law would have on communities of faith, that they have these churches that are not monolithic in their political views, that there is diversity there and they like that, and they're not concentrated on partisan campaigning and they don't want to be. But if the law were to change, they really think that that nonpartisan character of their house of worship would too. And they've put up a strong fight to say, no, we don't want that. And so far, we have all been successful in keeping change at bay.
Yeah, you know, we're sitting here in Missouri, and I saw that on Twitter this morning, you already noted that you were seeing all the campaign signs because we're in the middle of a contested election here in Missouri. And we've had more campaign dollars spent on our Senate race than any other Senate race in the country. And I'm not sure there's anybody who's watching television tonight and then thinking, you know what, I'd like to see one of these ads during my next church service as well. Right? We'd like to have this space, this sanctuary that's safe from all the partisan politicking that we're really getting everywhere else.
Exactly. I mean, I was just watching the morning news this morning, and the entire commercial break was ad after ad for not just the Senate race, but other races as well. And you can just see the enormous amount of campaign spending that's being dumped on the state and will continue to be dumped until all of the votes have been cast. And you're right. Our churches, and not just our churches, but our entire nonprofit sector are really some of the last places you can go and know that you're not going to hear a campaign ad. And it is because of the tax law that says that there won't be partisan campaigning in our 501c3 sector.
Well, one of the unique aspects about the BJC is that you're one of the few spaces today where multiple Baptist bodies come together. I think particularly one of few spaces where more than a couple of bodies come together.
Yeah.
We have more than a dozen Baptist bodies that are part of the BJC that represent a wide diversity of perspectives on a lot of issues.
They do.
So I'm curious about that aspect of the BJC's work of bringing these Baptist bodies that don't otherwise often come together.
Yeah. And that's the J of the BJC, the joint part of it. And it's been like that since our beginning, that we've been a coalition of Baptist groups that have come together because they are committed to protecting religious freedom for all. They say there wouldn't be a dozen or more than a dozen groups if they all agreed on everything. That's why there are so many. But they all agree on the importance of religious liberty for all. And because of that, the BJC is singularly focused on religious freedom, right? That's the only issue that we work on. We don't take positions on other matters. And that helps preserve that unity among our groups. I think it also gives us a clarity of voice on these issues that you don't have to wonder, are we serving some other end in our advocacy for religious freedom. Because I think increasingly now we see that religious liberty is being used to get to some other policy end. We don't have positions on all those other issues. And so instead we can ask in every case, you know, how will religious liberty for all best be served here? And that's how we can come to the positions that we do, whether it be on legislation or in cases that are pending.
And Chris, you also work with other groups. We mentioned this a little bit with the advocacy last year on the Johnson Amendment, working ecumenically with other Christian groups, working in interfaith partnerships. And so I also wonder if you could talk about this coalition building work that the BJCC does and why that's so important.
Yeah, that has been crucial to our efforts and our success over decades. In Washington, particularly in the nonprofit community, coalitions are key because we're going up against much larger interests, much more moneyed interests. And so when we can all come together around a single advocacy goal, and we come at it from our different perspectives, we bring strength in that diversity, but also in that kind of altogether push towards whatever goal we're going for. And that has been really important, particularly on Johnson Amendment. The BJC helped organize the faith community around protecting the Johnson Amendment. That was the more than 100 groups that you mentioned. We've also been working with secular groups that represent the broader nonprofit community, also groups that represent good government and trying to keep money out of politics. So we have those groups represent a lot of different issues, and we certainly aren't working together all of the time, but when one particular problem comes up, in this case, you know, efforts to get rid of the Johnson Amendment, we've been able to get around the table, sometimes literally, you know, and work out strategies, figure out where our different strengths are, and work together for a common goal.
So what's the thing that's most exciting you right now with the work of the BJC?
Yeah, I look to the future. There are so many problems in our area. But I don't get discouraged about it. I really don't. I see these as opportunities for us to further our work, for more people to learn about religious liberty for all, to learn why Baptists care about it, why we are heirs to hundreds of years of Baptists standing up for religious freedom for all, and getting more people to join our cause. Kind of one of the next horizons for the BJC is we're really working on messaging and how to bring even more clarity to these issues and equipping our supporters and advocates with the tools they need to go out and bring more clarity to the debates. And so I'm excited about being able to bring that to people and to be able to show that, whether it be in new web materials and new speaking materials, ways that we can get even more people kind of pulling in the same direction.
Well, very good. We look forward to it. And thank you so much for being here and for all the work that the BJC does.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Thanks for all your work getting the word out on the Johnson Amendment. It's a really crucial time for it, particularly here in Missouri.
And that does it for this BJC podcast. For the entire interview, be sure to check out Baptist Without an Adjective on iTunes. Our thanks again to Brian Kaler for joining us today. For more podcasts from the Baptist Joint Committee, visit our website at bjconline.org/podcasts.